Okay, I think with the hour, I want to read you Thompson. Now, Geo, or 8-Bit, or Sheehan, is with Dave Neufeld. So you got this top guy in digital music making from Venice. Did you meet Geo, Jermaine? Yeah, you met Geo.
Yeah.
Yeah, you met Geo.
He came with us.
Beg your pardon?
Yeah, he came with you guys at the hotel. I met him, right?
Right. So that first night, yeah, he came over late. So he got mm-hmm. together with Dave Neufeld. I flew him up, and we're putting these two geniuses of digital music together to see what's happening. And before the show, I thought that they should hear the emptying the guff. It's 10 minutes on howionic.com, the first item under addenda. So we were listening to it an hour or two ago, and they hadn't listened to it. They hadn't absorbed this thing about the guff and the guff emptying. So I was telling them how Thompson, as a public intellectual, was on top of this incredibly 20 years ago. So I told them, I don't know if they're listening, but I told them I'm going to read it. So I just discovered this a few days ago. Thompson, we knew he said that there'd be a mass die-off. He was saying that like in the 80s or 90s, 20 or more years ago. Well, in this book, Coming Into Being, which is based on lectures he gave me and our buddies at the Cathedral St. John the Divine in 92, 3, 94, 95, 96, the book comes out in 96. It's a really good book, Coming Into Being, and I read this 20 years ago. In a way, it's dedicated to me because he talks all about McLuhan all the way through it, and he told me in 93 he didn't know why I was bringing up McLuhan, but by 95 he realized, holy shit, there's a revival of McLuhan, and he was a good McLuhanite, so he brings in McLuhan to this book and quotes him all through it. Talks about how correct McLuhan was. And so what was that? So this book, Coming Into Being, is a distillation of what I heard sitting in his lectures. He'd come every 6 months and be there for about a month. So it'd be like four or five lectures. So listen to this. Okay, what else to say about this? So we knew he talked about mass die-off, but I never knew that he saw it as a good thing, just like Ion. So watch this. So you go back and listen to the Emptying the Guff, the first item under addenda at howionic.com. You'll hear Ion talking about the good effects that are going to come from the emptying the guff. And back then, we didn't know that the guff would be empty in a couple of years, and a few years ago now. We have no obvious evidence of it, like we thought there'd be an EMP or something, or Ion seemed to say that. But it didn't. So let's find the position. He does some interesting talk about finding its wake, and then he says, okay, do it here. So I'm starting on page 151, and I'm going to go to page 153. He says, when a new mentality comes in. So he's been discussing the five mentalities, the, say, 10,000 B.C. to 3,500 B.C. is the arithmetic mentality. And it leads into 3,500 B.C. to 1,400 B.C., which becomes the geometric mentality. Then there's the Mediterranean and algebraic mentality. That's 1,000 years ago. And then there's the industrial mentality, which is called the Galilean dynamical mentality. So the looking at the equations of motion, the analysis of movement, currencies, creating interest, and ballistics. So that was 500 years ago. That's Leonardo da Vinci's kind of stuff. That was the Galilean dynamical mentality. And in the 20th century, we get into the complex dynamical mentality, the world of chaos theory and chaos and catastrophe. And what I'm going to read you is the fifth mentality. So he's been explaining this phases over the last 13,000 years. So he goes... actually starts at 200,000 B.C. with the beginning, the archaic mentality. Okay, so he says, when a new mentality comes in, it brings with it an otherness in quotes, in which what was sinful and fallen in the old mentality begins to become the center of attention and even the new medium of communication. So he's going to use the industrial mentality, the Galilean mentality, as an example, that the previous mentality, the geometrical and algebraic, motion was bad. So you had the spheres, the harmony of the spheres, the stable temple-based reality, center with stable margins. So that's going to be upset by kinetic space and the industrial mentality of the Galilean movements. Galilean. You know, I make a lot of Galileo. So he's going to say the motion of the Galilean period was considered evil in the period before. So he's saying the new environment, you look at what's being evil. What's evil today? And that's going to be the characteristics of the new mentality when the new mentality gets locked in. So he's saying when a new mentality comes in, it brings with it an otherness or strangeness in which what was sinful and fallen in the old mentality, the obsolescence mentality, begins to become the center of attention and even a new medium of communication. For the geometrical mentality, motion is fallen and imperfect, and usury is sinful. But for the new dynamical mentality, 500 years ago, the motion of falling objects in space is what the new sciences are all about. And the movement of money that generates value through interest is what the new economy of capitalism is all about. What was hitherto noise is looked upon as interesting information. To get a feeling for this quality of otherness in one mentality and then another, think of the way homosexuality is understood. And he's writing this 20, 25 years ago. Think of the way homosexuality is understood, not in New York or San Francisco, where it's more openly accepted, but in Tulsa, Oklahoma. For the fundamentalist followers of Oral Roberts, homosexuality is an abomination and the essence of sin. But for the new postmodern mentality, the focus is primarily on the unnatural as the condition of the evolutionary shift out of nature into a purely artificial culture, or we'd say virtual reality culture. It is all part and parcel of a technological shift in which artificial intelligence, artificial life, artificial fertilization, thermonuclear fusion, and virtual reality are involved in not simply a fashionable deconstruction of romantic literature, but a complete deconstruction of the whole value system of romanticism's, quote, return to nature, unquote. I read that again. It is all part and parcel of a technological shift in which artificial intelligence, artificial life, artificial fertilization, thermonuclear fusion, and virtual reality are involved in not simply a fashionable deconstruction of romantic literature, but a complete deconstruction of the whole value system of romanticism's return to nature. Now, he's going to say that the gay culture, and I've said this many times, the gay culture likes artificiality because, assuming for most cultures in the chemicality world, heterosexual sex was the norm. So the gays are doing something unnatural or out of nature. Now, it's not that Thompson believes that, but he's saying in Oklahoma, that's what the American meme believes. So if artificial android meme reality is not real, not natural, then the gays are the perfect generators of artificial culture. So that's what so they're evil, but they're going to describe the present. So look at this. So he says, Thompson says, so a change in mentalities is not simply a change in fashion. It is a cultural transformation in which, quote, evil is the enunciation of the next cultural level of organization, unquote. It is a historical tragedy in which both sides are wrong and right at the same time. So the homosexuals are wrong and the fundamentalists are wrong because they don't know the McLuhan level. Some homosexuals' commitment to high technology and artifice created a culture in the 70s in which many gay men took poppers in quotes, and antibiotics before going out cruising on Saturday night. Some researchers have claimed that the disintegration of the immune system in AIDS is not simply an HIV infection, but an interior disorganization of the immune system brought forth by a subculture of overuse of antibiotics and recreational drugs. Not surprising, the fundamentalists are delighted and see AIDS as the wrath of God against the Sodom and Gomorrah of New York and San Francisco. Meanwhile, the fundamentalists, in their commitment to good old Republican values, are breaking down the immune system of the planet as the ozone hole widens and the greenhouse gases accumulate from good old-fashioned industrial development and growth economies. So the fundamentalists, the Christian fundamentalists, are old-fashioned. They want the worker life, the worker thing, suburban reality where you have a job and you keep making weaponry. So Thompson's pointing out that kind of technology caused a huge ozone hole. Now, we're not concerning what Ian says about all this, just what Thompson's saying. So the Republicans they're for family values, but they're wrecking the environment. So So Thompson says, so the candle of our present cultural ecology is getting burned at both ends, and there's no way anybody is going to be safe anywhere. All humanity is involved in this bifurcation, or what the chaos dynamists prefer to call, quote, a catastrophe bifurcation. Okay, so now we're going to get into some good stuff. So he's talking about the figure of homosexual versus the Christian, the culture war of the 90s, that's what it was called, the culture war. And many people say the gays won it because Jerry Falwell and them, they retreated and quit. But Donald Trump had to bring in a fundamentalist governor to fit in the election world, so Trump thinks there's still a fundamentalist meme out there that's politically important. And we could say, well, anybody who gets involved with politics is stupid, so backward, slow cultures are involved with the election. That's who the election is targeting. That's where the issues are around, the debate. So, yes, the fundamentalists would be a key factor in that old environment. So he's saying, uh-oh, catastrophe bifurcation. So then Thompson says on page, we now go to page 152, global pollution is another form of the phenomenology in which evil is the enunciation of the next level of organization. Pollution is the membrane between the global economy and the biosphere. And since agriculture and cattle can also be damaging to the biosphere and its global weather patterns, not even an Amish farmer can claim to be innocent. So the only true fundamentalists are the Indians in the Amazon rainforest. Small wonder that they are being burned out of their home and eliminated as an option for humanity. All members of humanity are involved in this evolutionary crisis, no matter what historical cultural level of development they are, no matter to which mentality they are committed. Humanity is in the grip of a huge obsession. Fundamentalists would call it a possession by the devil. So fundamentalists think humanity is possessed by the devil. So as we move out of the old cultural ecology of transoceanic capitalism, that's the Galilean dynamic, 1500 to 1945, and are moving out of that and our one sustaining biosphere of the physical plane, that's not sustaining us anymore, we find ourselves within a subtle body, a bardo condition. He's like quoting the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And angelic body politic. See, that's McLuhan's discarnate. McLuhan says we're super angels, so I think he's aware of McLuhan, or he's at least trying to describe the discarnate state and the android meme. So he says, we find ourselves within a subtle body, a bardo condition. An angelic body politic that is a remorseless description of who we are and who we wish to be. Or think of it this way. Matter and physical reality are a kind of thick insulation, one that protects us from the immediate consequences of our thoughts. That makes us Dumuzi, which is an ancient arithmetic mentality god, shepherd king, who got made top dog by Inanna when they moved from matriarchal society into patriarchal. So, reading that again, matter and physical reality are a kind of thick insulation, one that protects us from the immediate consequences of our thoughts, that makes us Dumuzi on Earth rather than Inanna in the underworld. When we die and go into bardo, we no longer have that protection of matter and physical reality, that delayed reaction of the consequences of our thoughts, of our state of consciousness. We become immediately what we are, and we are what we think. So that's what the Tibetan Book of the Dead says. When you die, you go through the bardos, and whatever you're thinking immediately manifests in front of you. So Thompson says, it is not God's wrath or human justice. It is just isness, this bardo condition. We are what we are. Now imagine several billion people going into bardo all at once. We just heard Ion talking about that on that quote I played. Now imagine several billion people going into bardo all at once, say, in some gigantic historical catastrophe, such as the reversal of the Earth's magnetic field and the wobbling of the poles. Suddenly, billions of people are in bardo all at once. They are in the astral plane, sharing a common mind, a common noetic polity. This discarnate superangelic condition he calls noetic polity, noetic based on the word noosphere. And that's the android meme, as at least part of the android meme as I mean it. Oh, let's Chad is not able to speak. I just unmuted him. But no speaking yet. So he's describing the die-off. Like the quivering spirochetes in Lynn Margulis' films. Lynn Margulis is a biologist famous for the bacterial part of the Gaia hypothesis that her colleague James Lovelock brought in 1972, and Thompson builds a lot on that. So you see these little spirochetes in these scientific laboratory films of bacteria. Like the quivering spirochetes in Lynn Margulis' films, and he talks about them in the beginning of the book, this pattern of consciousness can become formed enough to allow an emergent state to pattern it sufficiently. so that this noetic polity becomes a form of incarnation. And then he quotes the earlier part of this book about the vibrating spirochetes. It ain't the meat, it's the motion. So reading that again. Like the quivering spirochetes in Lynn Margulis's films, this pattern of consciousness can become formed enough to allow an emergent state to pattern it sufficiently so that this noetic polity becomes a form of incarnation. It ain't the meat, it's the motion. Then he says, so the extended mind of the billions in Bardo becomes the incarnational field of other forms of consciousness in the universe. In dynamical, that's Galilean dynamical or complex dynamical theory, you could say that the accumulation of noise draws the system from one attractor to another. The mythological or paranoid forms of narrative for this would be to call it, quote, possession by the devil, that's for the demonically inclined or the Christians, or it can be called salvation in the mystical body of Christ if you're angelically inclined. So he's trying to put a value judgment on this discarnate post-mass die-off situation. The work of art that expresses this catastrophe bifurcation is Hieronymus Bosch's painting, The Last Judgment. That's about 500 years ago. For it shows heaven breaking in on top and all hell breaking loose below. That's Ion. Heaven breaking in, right, on top. And you can speak at this point. What do you say that, Chad? Ion is heaven cute. Breaking in. What did you say?
So that's cute.
Yes. So Thompson has got the terminology right. And he's talking about Bosch's painting predicted this, because Bosch was talking about the effects of the printing press 500 years ago and how it was upsetting the feudal world. For it shows it shows heaven breaking in on top and all hell breaking loose below. Then he says, now, in chaos dynamical theory, the catastrophe bifurcation brings forth an acceleration of time, an evolutionary quantum leap. Because the Bardo or the astral plane is more pliable to consciousness than matter is, a vividly shared imagination is not simply a shared consensual delusion. That's what the Android meme presents every day, a shared consensual delusion on the TV body level. But Thompson's saying, this situation is not that. It's a collective form of incarnation. It's more like a civilization than a fantasy. When a billion people move into this instantaneous civilization in Bardo to participate in the galactic consciousness of an archangel, then an enormous leap forward in cosmic evolution becomes possible. Now, how's that? You can call Ion the archangel. And we've moved into the Ionic environment, and this is a big leap in cosmic evolution. Kim or anybody, isn't that pretty prophetic by Thompson?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's showing the surface of this catastrophe, on the surface catastrophe. He says, the galactic archangel, which would be Iondom, is like an electrical transformer that takes in direct current and steps it down to alternating current so that one can run the domestic appliances without burning up. Remember, Ion gave us RNA drops to prepare for the living water so that we don't burn up. That's a pretty good sentence there, Ched. The galactic archangel is like an electrical, you know how much Ion uses electrical, the toast and electrical instruments as metaphors. The galactic archangel is like an electrical transformer that takes in direct current and steps it down to alternating current so that one can run the domestic appliances without burning up. Only in this case, the domestic appliances are the chakras. If all of this sounds pretty far out and sci-fi, and it certainly did 20 years ago, it's precisely because science fiction was the smuggling past customs of this new mentality. Think of Arthur C. Clarke's novel Childhood's End, which the Evergreens said 25 years ago was the best description of what was coming. That book, at the ending of the book, and Clarke went on to make 2001 with Kubrick. So Thompson says, think of Arthur C. Clarke's novel Childhood's End as an intuition of this, or the ending of the film he worked on with Stanley Kubrick, 2001 A Space Odyssey. From this cosmic point of view, the catastrophe in which billions die and enter Bardo all at once may not actually be a catastrophe at all, but a galactic opportunity for accelerated evolution, which is exactly what we heard on that recording. If humanity simply goes on as usual, we may simply slide down into a Bosnia that lasts for an eon. That's the murders in Bosnia was happening at the time he's writing this. For those who require an optimistic outlook on life to get out of bed in the morning, consider the fate of the dinosaurs. The dinosaurs died in the last great collective death of the Cretaceous extinction, but they came back as the birds that we see all around us. So, you got to hand it to Thompson. No one else wrote that and turned out to be correct. If you believe on it. So you should stand amazed.
It does explain our situation better than a lot of what we have been trying to work through, you know, with a lot of the composers and the different media that we've been examining with you over the last few years.
While trying to understand Ion is what you're saying.
Correct. And I think this quote takes it to where what it is, and then you kind of can work backward now, looking at McLuhan, looking at Zappa, to kind of fit it more in a perspective, you know, because sometimes, I don't know, I know I tried so hard to reach to where you were taking us, and it took a long time to get a big overview of that. I think Thompson's done a very good job with that quote of getting us to that overview, you know, and to relax a little more and then understand that what you and what McLuhan said, we live 200 years every year, all the things that's been going on in the five bodies. There's just so much that's happened. So much.
So I read this into our Zappa thing on Saturday night with Roxanna and Chad, I think, was there, and a bunch of other people. So the part I didn't read here where Thompson's talking about the angelic music. And I, my thesis is Zappa made the music that that approximates angelic communication, which Thompson's saying we're moving into humans merging with angels. Now, we know Ion makes a little more better distinctions, but no, who's thinking that way 25 years ago and saying, all right, we're merging with angels, and a whole new kind of music was happening. I say Zappa's music is the music that gets into the complexities of a merger with the angelic dimension, or Iondom. So we make this part of the whole thing. So you'll see, I do say Zappa is not that out of it. He doesn't say what Thompson's saying, but he's expressing musically what Thompson's talking about. And Thompson doesn't know that. Thompson likes Philip Glass, or maybe he'll talk about Stockhausen or John Cage or something like that, but I don't think Thompson was up on Zappa. So, anybody else getting so you see the value of this, of what Thompson's doing here, Kim. That's good. That's the point here. So get the book, Coming into Being, and read it all. I mean, this is just the middle of the book when I'm reading. Anybody else got anything to say? OJ, you got something to say about this?
Yeah. No, I just tuned in.
I know. So you missed it.
Yeah. Can you fill me in briefly?
Okay, so Ion is, Thompson is saying 25 years ago that humanity is in such a dire situation there's going to be a mass die-off. Billions of people are going to die in some kind of accumulated catastrophes. And then he says, but this is not a bad thing. And he begins to describe what's going to happen. The good part that comes out of this, this new leap, quantum leap in evolution, will come out of this mass die-off. And it's exactly what Ion expressed at the beginning of the show when I played a recording. No, I didn't play it for you guys. What did I play? I played it for Dave Neufeld and Gio. Just go to howionic.com, go into the section called Addenda, and listen to the first item called Emptying the Guff. It's 10 minutes. And Ion was describing it back then in March 24, 2010. So I played it for Neufeld and Gio, who were together, and they had not heard it. And Ion describes the utopia that's going to happen when the veil disappears and the guff is emptied. And then that's appropriate to what I'm reading. So here's what Thompson says in the last paragraph. Now, in chaos dynamical theory, the catastrophe bifurcation brings forth an acceleration of time, an evolutionary quantum leap, because the barter or the astral plane is more pliable to consciousness than matter is. A vividly shared imagination is not simply a shared consensual delusion, but a collective form of incarnation. It's more like a civilization than a fantasy. When a billion people move into this instantaneous civilization in Bardo to participate in the galactic consciousness of an archangel, and I would call that Iondom, then an enormous leap forward in cosmic evolution becomes possible. The galactic archangel, or Iondom, is like an electrical transformer that takes in direct current and steps it down to alternating current so that one can run the domestic appliances without burning up. That's why we took the drops to prepare us for the living water, so we don't get destroyed by the burn. living water and bread of life. Only in this case, the domestic appliances are the chakras. If all of this sounds pretty far out in sci-fi, it is precisely because science fiction was the smuggling past customs of this new mentality. Think of Arthur C. Clarke's novel Childhood's End as an intuition of this, or the ending of the film he worked on with Stanley Kubrick, 2001, A Space Odyssey. From this cosmic point of view, the catastrophe in which billions die and end of bardo all at once may not actually be a catastrophe at all, but a galactic opportunity for accelerated evolution. If humanity simply goes on as usual, we may simply slide down into a Bosnia that lasts for an eon. For those who require an optimistic outlook in life to get out of bed in the morning, consider the fate of the dinosaurs. The dinosaurs died in the last great collective death of the Cretaceous extinction, but they came back as the birds that we see all around us. They came back as the birds we see all around us. So that's the basic point. You're writing your book, OJ, you're looking at Laura Reading and Lewis and these different people and trying to make sense of our present. Well, this takes us beyond the themes in your book, doesn't it? Are you going to say you're thinking on this level?
I am thinking on that level, very much so.
Okay.
I have been for years. And the book is about the 20th century, and it's about where we're going now. And I look at all the big thinkers, Mumford, McLuhan, other people. But, that guy Charles Eisenstein, who you've seen in my email thread, he's an author, and he's been talking about for a decade about how the converging crises of our time are going to somehow lead to a rebirth of humanity. He calls it the ascent of humanity. To contrast it with Jacob Bronowski's ascent of man, the ascent of humanity.
Yeah.
And it's not linked to crass technological improvements. It's deeper. Now, another person that talks about this...
Well, what's that name again? What's it, Charles Eisenstein, or what is
Eisenstein.
It?
Eisenstein. Okay, it's you. Charles Eisenstein.
Okay.
And...
Yes, I've seen his name in your emails.
Yeah. Anyway, another guy who goes along these lines is... Alfred de Grazia, who was an eminent political scientist who was an early supporter of Emmanuel Velikovsky when everyone was saying Emmanuel Velikovsky was crazy. He was one of the big guns supporting Velikovsky.
Right.
And he ran
yeah.
the Velikovsky work and kind of came up with his own philosophy called quantivolution. Instead of evolution, quantivolution. So instead of gradual, minute changes over time, we see quantum leaps in the fossil
yeah.
record. We see it, and he proposed an organization of the evolution of the solar system and in human society. And I'm sure he was pretty early on talking about, because he's long dead. I'm sure he
yeah.
was talking about a quantum leap coming.
So Velikovsky talks about worlds in collision, things like that.
Yeah.
So. The idea of a major billions dying in a collision, that would be within Velikovsky's scenario.
Well, not necessarily. No, maybe more de Grazia. Velikovsky said there was a massive die-off already, and that
yes.
was what initiated megalithic civilization and Earth and onward. Well, actually, Velikovsky talked about multiple catastrophes, but the latest theory says that there was more... one big one and a few smaller ones, one really big one. And that, kind of like an abused child, humanity has grown through that early abuse and through the decisions it made has grown to become quite psychotic. De Grazia called it homo schizoid.
Right.
And we so might, Finnegan's Wake talks about this. That phase might be coming to an end because of... the communication that's happening.
Right. Are you still here, Austin? Or Greg, is Austin still here? I guess not. Anyways, just wanted to say, this is one of your peers talking, Austin. I mean, OJ is just 22. You're 23?
23.
OJ? Yeah.
23 now.
So this guy's reading a lot of stuff. So what I just read... about Mike Thompson is not strange to you. You can see, you say you're writing with that kind of theme. right? Your book is about this catastrophe bifurcation.
Oh, you're talking to me?
Yeah.
No, but it can never leave, you know, my consciousness now. So, it'll play into it, but it's more about the previous phase.
The previous what? Phase, did you say?
Previous phase.
Yeah. You've got this mass bifurcation catastrophe thing in your mind because Ion said it, or your other readings,
no,
like DeGrasse?
It started with Eisenstein, and I kind of came up with it myself before him. I just noticed when I was in high school, I just noticed that just so many really catastrophic things impending in every sphere. I mean, a real mess. It's like a house of cards. Education, politics, economics. So
right, that's true.
I kind of saw that.
A lot of it's already happened. It's like the question is: can there be any recovery in any recognizable form? Thompson says no. We're just going to keep plunging forward. It's going to get worse and worse.
Sure.
But he does say it will flip into a breakthrough. So that's what Ion says. I saw a picture of your mother recently. She's very young looking. Is that? That's a recent picture, right?
That's a recent picture. She's 55.
Yeah, she looks pretty good.
Yeah, she's Chinese, and she runs, she's 5'2", and she runs tons of marathons and triathlons.
Where does she do this, in Hawaii?
All over, mostly in Hawaii is where she lives, but she kind of travels all over the world. She probably does at least 10 trips to different countries to do these events.
And her job, her income source allows her to leave work or whatever, or she doesn't work.
Yeah, she's a drug dealer. So yeah.
You mean she works for the pharmaceutical companies?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So she does well, and she can afford these breaks. So, have you told her about Remag and our products?
No, I haven't.
You should tell her. She might find them make her even better at it.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. I'm visiting soon, yeah.
Are you there now?
No, I'm in California now, but I'll probably see her soon.
Yeah, maybe if you can get her interested, if she shows an interest, we can meet when you're in Hawaii.
Meet my mom?
Yeah, well, in this context of improving her athletic ability with our products.
Okay, we'll see.
So she's into the main Android meme version of drugs. We're not really part of the Android meme, sort of. But anyways, if she's open to this, she may not be. Then maybe she'd like to talk to us. At least you'll be in Oahu. You won't be coming to. She's not in Maui, right?
No, yeah, she's in Oahu.
Yeah, let me get her on the phone with Carol and talk about it, because we have Lynn, who's an Olympic level athlete, and what has happened to her with the RNA drops in our products? She's a super super athlete now. She runs at like 20 miles up a mountain, passing everybody. Like dashes up a 20, you know, a 2 mile mountain or something. It's incredible what she does. So she's a good example. Yeah, you remember her? You've heard her being on a couple of years ago. Lynn used to talk about her physical abilities.
Yeah, I remember her talking about it and about her body and how, like, the shape of it changed and her endurance.
Yeah, she was even
strength.
Yeah, she was even running and agreeing with Ion that the oxygen intake was diminishing. She sort of felt she didn't breathe.
And was that her who was saying that when she's running, sometimes she goes into another world, like she goes on autopilot, she doesn't even remember.
I think she said that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, a lot of interesting things. So, this is the opportunity of your mother to move to a new level, OJ.
Okay, let's stop talking about my mom.
Okay, so what is? Does anybody? So everybody's stunned by Thompson? Are you impressed?
Yes.
I'm impressed. Oh, who said that?
Yeah.
Andrew.
Ah, Andrew, yes. Yeah, what do you think of this? Young mind hearing this stuff.
Well, this is my first time hearing a lot of this stuff, so I honestly feel slightly like I'm drowning, but it's really amazing. Like, it's looking at it that way is, I mean, it agrees with a lot of, like, the spiritual stuff that I've started to look into, and, like, Buddhism talks about the Bhārya state a lot, and that's what I adhere to most of the time. And
yeah, you know, Thompson, William R. Thompson, a good friend of the Dalai Lama.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Okay, so that's good. Yeah, this is what more and more young people should hear. This kind of college age should hear this kind of information, because they're starving for it. They're capable of understanding it, but they just heard about it. You know, smart kids out there, and we think we provide a whole mind expanding situation here, especially with Ion. So you're appreciating that.
Definitely. I have some questions for you, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
So this is like my first contact with understanding what Ion's here for and like what it's about. So
yeah.
I just kind of see if I can understand at least a little bit. So Ion's here to basically prepare us for the end of this era, as Thompson was talking about.
Yes. A very dramatic, like there'll be no more time. It's the very extreme conditions that Ion is telling us about, that humanity is basically not prepared for. They don't know how drastic it is, how new it's going to be.
Okay. So our products are meant to, if we're
people,
a drastic change, if there's going to be a lot of people dying off, then why worry about the physical health of our body right now?
Well, the frequency, Ion says, of the world's going to change. And many people will not be comfortable in that frequency. It's like a technical thing. Your body just can't take it. And this frequency change is inevitable. It's already happening. And Ion came forth to give us products that will change your frequency so that you won't feel uncomfortable with the new inevitable change. And that's what you distribute, the RNA drops, do that. They alter people's frequency beyond genetic knowledge, beyond whatever whack job knowledge paradigm. What Ion's saying is happening can barely be understood in normal scientific terms. Carolyn's pretty good at understanding it. And that's what Ion is a warning, and says that the drops prepare us, and if you're exhaling, and you're on the drops and you're exhaling, you're changing your neighborhood, you're changing the world, it's a preparation for our newer products coming down the assembly line soon, is the what we call bread of life and living water. And Ion said if we took these products, if they were available 5 years ago, 6 years ago, we would die if we drank what we're giving. So the world's been changed by what you're sending out there. Now, Greg's ever told you any of this?
I asked him about it, but he did not share it.
Oh, maybe you guys aren't supposed to know. But anyways, now you know, so that's good. And but, yeah, that's. Did you have an inkling of this at all in any way, that that's what the RNA drops did?
Yeah, I had a physical experience myself. I've been on about 30 drops a day for 2 months or so. And, I started to really experience my own ability to deal with everything that shows up in my sphere on, like, a completely different level. Like,
yeah.
Eating, sleeping, sickness, all sorts of things. Like, it's all changed. Like, I have cravings for what my body needs, and I eat it, and it feels so much better than it used to. Like, I do things nowadays that don't make any sense necessarily at the time, but every single time it makes so much more sense looking back in hindsight. Like, I have feelings and that don't make any sense to have at that moment in time, but later on I'll look back and go, if I didn't have that, then I wouldn't have gotten to where I was. I mean,
how long have you been working for Greg?
About 6 months.
Oh, okay, and you just got around to doing the drops a few months ago. Well, that what you're describing is what everybody on the phone here has gone through. Right, Kate? Right, Chad? Right,
yeah.
Madeline? Well, not the
pretty, yeah. Pretty much the same in the beginning.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's very good that you're doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on it for... It's amazing. It really is.
Yeah, but see, so you know your body's frequency, vibration, total effect is changing. You know, it's been changed by this product. And
yeah,
that's
definitely
getting you ready to even hear this show, to even hear what Thompson's saying. Makes you better able to take it.
You find you're craving different foods you would have never eaten before?
Yeah, a ton, actually. I mean, I never had any.
Ian says you need more protein with these drops because you're growing new double helix threads. What do they call it? Double helix? Forget it.
Strands.
Thread?
Strands.
What? Oh, yeah, strands.
Strands. S-T-R-A-N-D. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, feeling a craving for foods that you might not have had as a vegetarian or something is normal. So what are you craving?
Spicy food, fish of all types, and actually Asian food, like eating just simple noodles. It's funny that they sound like simple noodles, fruit, vegetables, and meat, like just that in every single meal, and it's been wonderful.
Okay, so the show's going to end any second now, but stay on the line. We don't stop the show. It's not going to be recorded anymore. It's not being broadcast, but we keep talking. So you'll hear this ending music come in, and then we'll keep talking. But that's a really good testimony you gave there. Sort of funny, eh? You guys are talking to the guy that sends you your stuff.
Yeah.
And also awesome.
Cool.
I'm also the guy with Jay
on board.
What? Quick.
Are there a lot of people who work in the warehouse?
No. Hardly anybody works in the warehouse.